Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director at the Anthony Michael Group, building companies and careers across the industry. And today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Miss Alina Lysenki. Alina is the director of talent acquisition at a device company called Lexington Medical. And she comes to the show with over 20 years experience in recruiting and talent acquisition. She's worked across a variety of industries, starting out working in the technology space and then later on transitioning into medtech, working for names like Nova Biomedical, Vicarious Surgical, and of course, since 2024, a leading talent acquisition for Lexington. Alina holds her bachelor's in management communications and video production and her MBA with an emphasis in HR and IT. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with Lexington Medical, it's a Boston-based medical device company that manufactures minimally invasive surgical staple solutions. So we're going to dig right in here and welcome Alina to the show. How are you?
Good, Mitch. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. You and I have kept in touch on and off over the years, and it's great to have you here live and in living color with me to talk about your career journey and advice that you have for others in the industry. With that said, you know, I mentioned in the introduction, you did your bachelor's and part of it was in video production. How does somebody go from video production to recruiting? And I want to know more about how you got into that space to begin with, as far as the video production interest.
Sure. So you're just going back a year or two here in my life?
Just a year or two.
Yes, that was my degree. I went to Emerson College, and previously I was in high school and part of back then what we called the cable club, and very much a nerd in that space, doing video production, video recordings. And my goal was to run and direct live television, specifically TV, so live newscast. And that's why I decided on Emerson College, which is really a great program if you want to work in television. I loved my experience there, but really what I found, you know, being at Emerson College, being in television is fabulous and it's wonderful, but at the same time, it's certainly not a career that's conducive to having the balance in life. There's people that are very passionate about what they do and people that have the passion and the drive, which I think of myself as one of them, but I also think of myself as somebody who was planning to have a family at some point and perhaps that family in Boston, not wanting to necessarily move to LA or New York where you really need to be. To have a career in video. And so I made a transition during my education. I added a major of management communication and somehow landed in human resources.
So before we move on, do you still keep the interest in TV and kind of communication stuff like that? Do you keep that at all as a hobby, or did you really kind of have a clean break at that point?
Earlier on in my career, I actually worked for Avid Technology, which is a company that is in where I did recruiting at Avid, and that's a video production company. So that's what they make, is editing systems that I actually had used back at Emerson College. So that would say that's the closest connection that I've had. So it was a pretty clean break. I mean, I still enjoy taking photos and videos of my children, but that's about it.
And how does somebody with, you know, an interest in that, land in the abyss, if you will, of recruiting? How'd you get into this space?
When I graduated, it was a tough time in the market. And so I think it was really hard to get that first job out of college. And that's one thing I think about often is that first job out of college dictates so much of a career. It's such an important decision. So now when I'm on the other side, having that privilege to work, to talk to candidates who are just graduating and are landing their first job, it's a big decision. It's a life-changing decision. And so my first job out of college happens to be, I wanted to get into HR, couldn't really get into an internal HR job. And I found a staffing agency was looking for a recruiter. I thought that was as close to HR as I might be able to get in my first job. And so that's what I did. And so I started on the agency side. I think many of us with career in recruiting end up falling into it somehow. And that was certainly 100% the case for me. And getting a start in the agency was really great. I certainly learned a lot. It was an agency called The Deco that's still big and thriving today. And it was a great place to learn.
What's kept you engaged with recruiting, though, all these years? I mean, we're going on, 22 years or so? What's kept you in this game?
Yes, you are aging me a little bit, I will say, but it's okay.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. I think you and I are roughly the same age, so you're not alone.
Yes. I still do love that excitement of seeing people succeed and knowing that I was part of their journey at some point. And that's what's interesting about especially being in one industry now, and I love being in medical device. And so seeing people go from one company to the next and perhaps be at a company where I was their recruiter at one point and seeing them be promoted multiple times and knowing kind of their, you know, their introduction and being knowing that I helped them at some point and see how successful they are now. And I do love that. I do get motivated by that.
That's probably one of the best pieces of what we do for a living, because there's so many pieces that don't come together or so many hardships as far as the scheduling and the I'm not interested and I'm not and they're not qualified and the hiring manager wants this, but they have that. And so when you actually do get something to come together, yeah, there is absolutely a satisfaction to that. I mentioned at the beginning, you know, you're leading talent acquisition now, you're the director. So after you got into recruiting, you mentioned the stint on the third party side. And then you kind of transitioned internally. You worked for Avid, the technology company. You had a couple other stints before coming into MedTech. Did you have an idea in the back of your mind that you one day wanted to lead a department? Or did that just kind of happen over time and it wasn't something you were expecting?
I did, yes. When I think about my career, there are really three pivotal moments. And all that time, I think, is defined by me being intentional in my next step and also by me having the family support system in place at the right time. So that first pivotal moment for me was really making that transition from agency to corporate recruiting. And I was on the agency side early career, right? I was placing people in temporary administrative positions, hourly, on the hourly workforce side, right? So I wasn't doing retained searches for professional positions at more senior levels, right? And so for me, that was a great start. But taking that transition from agency to corporate recruiting was really difficult. Mm-hmm. And the way I was able to do that was by taking a contract recruiting coordinator job. So taking a risk, right? Leaving a full-time job with benefits and intentionally wanting to switch. So that was a pivotal moment where my life was set up. I was able to do that. At that point, I was engaged to my now husband. I was able to take a bit of a risk and take a short-term contract, which then led me to having had that corporate experience and get into my first corporate recruiting position. And that was, again, career-defining moment. I would say my next career-defining moment came when I really intentionally wanted to make that transition into healthcare. I was in technology for a long time and loved technology companies and being as fast-paced as they are, but also being in Boston and wanting to work for a company that at the end of the day is doing something good for people and helping patients. And it was really difficult to get into life sciences without having life sciences experience. Yes. And once again, I intentionally tried to get as close to that as possible. So my first position was with a healthcare consulting company, so digital health consulting, and it was again a contract role. And it got me close enough, but not quite there yet. But it was the next one when I was able to get into Nova Biomedical was a big break for me to get into a true medical device company.
Do you think that transit, that again, that risk you took as far as taking that temporary contract, do you think that basically gave the credibility that you needed to get into Nova Biomedical? Like, could you point to that and say, hey, had I not gained this experience, I don't know how much of how they would have looked at me as a candidate otherwise?
Maybe, because I was able to then learn what jobs at medical companies are, right? At that point, yeah. when you say regulatory affairs, I had no idea previously, right? Or quality, yeah. or even on the manufacturing side. And then at Nova Biomedical is when I first worked for a company that made things, in fact, made things right here in Massachusetts, which are my current company, Lexington Medical, does as well. So having a manufacturing workforce that builds an actual product that then goes out to customers who are, of course, working for us surgeons and are using that product in surgeries to lead to better outcomes for their patients. So to me, that's really exciting. But Nova Biomedical was really my first chance to be in that environment and then learn what people did at those companies and being able to hire engineers in manufacturing, mechanical engineers who are working, again, on physical product versus my previous experience was recruiting for more on the software side. So more recruiting for many different variety of positions, but none of those that worked with actual something that was physical.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I'm fascinated with is there's a book out there called The E-Myth, and I forgot the gentleman's name. I think his last name is Gerber. Richard Gerber? I'm going to check before we get off the podcast. But The E-Myth, have you heard of the book?
No.
The E-Myth basically talks about how people can be really good technicians, meaning they could be really good at what they do for a living. So, for example, in our world, they could be really good recruiters. But then you become the manager or perhaps the entrepreneur, the one who's kind of trying to drive the strategy and delegate. But the manager is a really, really tough position because a lot of people get promoted because they're really good at the technician level. They know their craft inside and out. And executives think, okay, that's the person we need to promote because they know what they're doing and they'll show the rest. Well, then the manager gets in this catch 22 where they have a really hard time letting go of what they know hands-on as far as their expertise and delegating more of the work to the technicians. Mm-hmm. And so it's like push and pull where I'm supposed to be a manager, but I'm still in the weeds. And how do I let go of that, but trust my team and kind of this conundrum that they face. Mm-hmm. For those who are listening, who are recruiters and they aspire to, hey, I want to run the department. I have a couple questions for you. What has it been like as far as actually running the department? I know you're still hands-on. You do your own searches, but you're leading the team too. Mm-hmm. What has it been? Let's start there. What has it been like for you in terms of what you were anticipating and some things that you didn't expect?
For sure. So that was really my third major career pivot was to become that people manager when I transitioned into Vicarious Surgical.
Yeah.
Which was, again, a career risk, right? Because it was a startup company and also a company that I knew would require me to work a lot, and I did. And I do think sometimes the similar analogies you use of a technician, sometimes your best salesperson is probably not going to be your best manager. For me, I did lean as a manager and I had been a manager very early on in my 20s. So really, as I was getting my MBA, I did dabble in as a manager. And frankly, maybe it wasn't my most successful experience, right? It was probably too early for me to become a manager back then. And so then I hadn't for a while. Well, my kids were young as I was raising my family. I was an individual contributor for quite some time and my kids were old enough. My husband was supportive of me at the time and we said I was ready to do it again. And so it was certainly not easy, especially, but I did lean into me being a really strong recruiter and knew that this is what I know inside and out. I have all the skills necessary to run searches and I knew what it takes to be a strong recruiter. I knew what it takes to be a strong sourcer. And I also had previously had a lot of experience with systems and tools and processes. And so I leaned into that. And so I did manage first through demonstrating to my team that, hey, I can do this. I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself or that I don't know how to do myself.
Yeah. So as far as the leading by example, definitely. But I'm sure you also, so at Vicarious, you had a couple people on staff?
The team grew very quickly and it grew to as many as 10 at one point.
You had as many as 10. So that means that you were relying on them to fill recs without your oversight. Basically, they had the direct, you know, responsibility to take a search, work with the hiring manager and get the right people on board. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. I trusted my
team. How did you do that? You know, as a first time true people manager, like in this space, how did you let go enough to trust that they would get the job done? What did you do, I guess, to give yourself comfort and at the same time give yourself your team the autonomy they needed?
For sure. And you know what? At the beginning, I didn't. And that was a definite learning and feedback that I got from my very generous team that was willing to give me feedback. And that is hard, right? As a first-time people manager to really delegate and let go, it takes a learning to do that, right? And it also takes the support of my manager, which I appreciated at the time. So yeah. There was definitely feedback from, you know, a 360 feedback that I was able to get informally, but I appreciated and learned along the way. Because it is, you know, you are thinking, gee, I wouldn't have done it that way myself. But then you have to let that go, right? Because I had recruiters that were on my team who were very successful and really great at what they did. And they did it in a different way than I did. And then that was okay. One of the things that my manager taught me is to look through the lens of, hey, what are your non-negotiables as a manager, right? And like, what are things that you're willing to deal with and let go and allow people to do the work the way that it makes sense for them. So I kind of made a list of what are those non-negotiables for me and be very clear about those for the team. And then other things, right? I want for my team members to have the space to do their work and be the most successful they can be.
That's awesome. And I appreciate you being vulnerable in saying, look, at the beginning, I didn't. And I had to learn through the feedback. But kudos to you because you took the feedback and you implemented it. So I want to know kind of the back end of that story. What did you do? What did you put in place to kind of give yourself a comfort that you could let go a little bit more?
For sure. So one is, of course, hiring, right? And certainly I'm in talent acquisition, so I'm biased, but I do think that the first thing that it comes down to is really getting the right people into jobs. And I was building out a team back in 2021, which if you were a recruiter in 2021, it was pretty good, right? And that was some really good time in the market. And if you were hiring recruiters in 2021, you were really struggling because the demand was quite something. In fact, I remember talking with our VP for software engineering at the time and saying, you know, I think it's easier for me to find you an engineer than for me to find a recruiter for my team who will hire you engineers.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. Looking back in 2021, if I could have worked 24 hours a day, I probably should have at the time because it really was something else.
I did. That's the year that I worked significant. I won't say how much. My husband will probably look at that period as with not the fondest memories, but I did work in 2021 around the clock.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a very supportive husband. I've noticed that you've called out a few different milestones where you really leaned on his support, which is awesome. Hopefully he'll listen to this and reap the recognition that he deserves. But hiring the right people. And then did you put any check-in processes in place or accountability on a weekly basis as far as metrics? How did you manage the performance of what was going on with each of the searches so that you at least had an understanding, but at the same time kind of let them do their job?
For sure. So we had Greenhouse is our recruiting system, which happens to be a shout out to Greenhouse. I'm now a second time Greenhouse customer. We just brought them on board here at Lexington Medical as well and enjoying the experience with Greenhouse once again. So we had Greenhouse in place, which of course does give really terrific reports and visibility. And one of my non-negotiables as a manager, as I had mentioned earlier, I have a list of them, but one of those lists is an applicant tracking system and requiring the team members to use that. So to schedule everything through that, to have all their notes in there, to not have other record keeping. The record of truth is our applicant tracking system. And so having that data in one place and following a specific process that we have in the applicant tracking system for every requisition is really important to me. For me, it's really leaning into that recruiting process and making sure that it's streamlined, usable, of course, easy to use. But again, for me to then, of course, have that visibility is really important. So I could then go in and say, hey, let's talk about this, right? What happened here?
Yep.
We did have weekly, I'm a big believer in weekly one-on-ones. So we would have weekly one-on-ones. So that was important and setting goals. So one of the things I also learned and that I tried hard to implement both in my professional life as well as home life with my children is I think people are more motivated and more likely to follow through if they set their own goals. So I would encourage each team member and myself follow that as well as to set goals in terms of goals for number of hires, goals for which searches may close, as well as goals for projects that we may want to complete. And then, of course, holding people accountable to those goals, goals for how much outreach, we're making in terms of for sourcers and percentages that we're trying to get to for responses, the number of candidates that we're putting together for searches and so on. So really having individuals come up with their own goals, track their own goals, I think is where the accountability truly comes in significantly better.
Nice. So I always compare our business of recruiting to real estate because you've got a sale on both sides, right? You have a sale on both sides. In your case, you've got a lot of different sales. So a lot of different stakeholders that you have to have influence on, and you need their buy-in and their support to actually get them what they need. In this case, that I'm referring to is the hiring manager, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd love to get your perspective on how you see TAs, basically your philosophy on talent acquisition as a whole. What does it mean to the organization? What does it mean to the hiring manager? What does it mean to the candidate? Like, where do you see, I guess, TA's role and what it is and what it isn't.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I've been thinking about that a lot. I think, and I've seen a huge shift, right? Like I've been doing this for a long time now. Certainly I've shifted based on my own experience and just the intuition and of course, expertise that I can bring into the process of talent acquisition. But I think what we do has shifted as well. And now that I've been at a few different companies, I think I'm seeing enough trends. I think there are certainly some people think of talent acquisition. I think longer ago, it was much more of our job to bring candidates forward, schedule interviews, and kind of leave it at that. I think I'm seeing that we're relied upon a lot more in the selection process. Being able to bring tools and systems in place that help business leaders and help hiring managers make decisions. Right. I'm not the one who's making the hire. Right. I'm not the hiring manager, the decision maker, but I'm constantly asked questions such as how do you evaluate a candidate to see if they're smart enough? Right. And that's one of the questions and I'm often challenged by, and what are the tools and what is the methodology that we have in place to make sure we do that? And so I think for me thinking of talent acquisition as really to be able to have that framework, the tools in place to make sure that we as an organization are making the right decisions. Now, it's not a science. We're not going to be right 100% of the time. And I have a leadership team here that certainly understands that and has realistic expectations and we collaborate together. But try to get that as that quality of hire as much as we can, right? Try to do the best we can and always do better when it comes to what we do in our selection process.
I think if I could sum up what you said, I think what you said is, hey, in the past, I feel like we were seen as more of like a check the box. We're going to source you candidates. We're going to bring to the immediate interview and let us know if you want us to make an offer or not. Now you feel like it's more strategic partnership where it's not just how do we source the right candidates, but once we have candidates who actually have the technical acumen, how do we make sure that we're hiring the right person for us, not only culturally, technically, but are they who we think they are? And how do we validate that through means that are available as far as different tools and technologies? Is that accurate?
Yes. That's a good summary. You're very good.
I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but are there any tools or technologies that you are comfortable talking about that you have found success in using to do just that?
For sure. I think certainly everybody's talking about AI, right? And as I was thinking about this in terms of AI, I think that the one place we're actually not using AI in our process is the screening stage. So the tool that we have currently with Greenhouse, although there's add-ons that you can have with Greenhouse that could have the AI capabilities in terms of parsing a resume, we're not using those. So we are actually looking at resumes, believe it or not. And for some roles, we get many of them, like 1,000 plus. Yeah. And usually one of us looks at those. But where we are using and really leaning into technology is more on the assessment side. So really just about every other part of the hiring process, I would say we certainly do use AI technology for, such as sourcing, of course, such as we use BrightHire for our interview process. BrightHire also helps us with writing job descriptions, with putting together competencies for a candidate, and then interview questions and evaluate each candidate against those specific competencies and really standardizing our interview processes. And then, so we do use and really lean into that technology, and it's been a really, has it been adopted widely within our company?
In 2025, I am adamant that AI, it's here. The rate at which it's evolving is quite honestly scary. And at the same time, it's unbelievable how much productivity it can give to a recruiter, both agency and internally. Where are you finding the most benefit from utilizing AI right now?
Personally, just having my phone calls with candidates be recorded just means that I can do so much more than I was able to before.
Yeah.
So not having to take notes. My colleague and I constantly talk about just how much more joy we get out of conversations when we're not frantic about taking notes.
Yeah.
Because we're truly able to now have conversations again, knowing that if there's somebody else in a way who's writing down everything that's important, and we can really focus on engaging with the candidate and getting to know them and not trying to write and talk at the same time. And it means that we can do more, have more conversations, but also, again, enjoy that experience of talking again. Yeah. And so I have loved that. We can also just see parallels between interviews for each candidate. We can make sure that, hey, this candidate, we needed to evaluate them on a specific competency. We asked so-and-so to do that interview process. Let's just double check that they in fact did it. And we can go back to an interview. We've been using it as a training tool as well. So to be able to say, hey, here's a moment in so-and-so's interview that went really well. If you're a new hiring manager, why don't you watch it and see what you think and see if that's something you may want to try for your interview. So it's been a really valuable tool for us.
There's so much going on and so much opportunity. One of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking about where you see the role of talent acquisition and how it's truly a strategic partner in the business if the organization will allow it, meaning like they have to embrace it. And I think it's TA's responsibility to demonstrate why there's that value add there. But so many hiring managers out there are great at what they do and they know how to drive business results, but they don't know how to hire. They just don't. And many people hire with their gut. Do I like this person? Do I think they could do the job? Hey, let's give them a shot. There's been a stat out there for years that hiring is like the flip of a coin. I want to say it's like 48% of the time it's a mishire, something like that. And the more that we can lower that down by actually putting in objective countermeasures to our gut, the more success we're going to be. And so I think AI can help with how do we create scorecards and ask what are the actual competencies we're screening for, and how do we formulate interview questions that will get at this, and then let's feed it to AI and ask it to rank it objectively against the candidates. Mm-hmm. I think that the more TA is empowered with, like, how do you truly get at what we're trying to get at by asking the hiring manager good questions as far as what they ultimately are looking for and mm-hmm. how do we back into that, you're going to be successful. And I got to be honest, you have a tough job because I'm sure there's a ton of different AI vendors reaching out to you saying they've got the next best product. And I think that you probably feel the pressure, like, AI is here, we should be using it. And leadership is probably like, AI is here, we should be using it. And you've got to figure that out. I can imagine that feels like a lot of pressure to you.
Yes, but I love trying out new vendors, right? So when I get reached out to by a vendor, I enjoy that. I enjoy getting to know new companies. BrightHire is one, for example, that I had explored years ago when they first came to the market. And at that point, it didn't feel like that it was the right fit. And now years later, I was able to bring them into this organization. We are currently trying an assessment vendor for our some of our engineering positions, and so we'll see. We'll see how successful that is. So I love trying new vendors and new tools to see which ones are useful to us, and I appreciate having the leadership team that supports us in trying new things as well. And
I was gonna say, yeah, more power to you guys for having that support to be like, yes, like, we want to be innovative, we want to be on the front end versus mm-hmm. being too late to the game and kind of losing to our competition. So good for you. Mm-hmm. With all the stuff that's going on, you mentioned kids, you mentioned your supportive husband, you've got a lot of things going on in your life, Alina. Do you have time or do you make time to continue to develop yourself outside of work? And if you do, what does that look like?
For sure. Have I done that? I would say a decent amount of that is actually, for me, I think of it as development when I talk to new vendors.
Yep.
So when vendors reach out to me and doing a demo about them or just getting to know what they do, to me, that's development in one way or another. So that would be one place. I also try to really stay on top of the new services that vendors that we currently use are introducing, because I want to make sure that I am utilizing them as everything that we have, right? Because it's not, right? Or my company is, of course, spending money on us having tools like these. And so if we're not optimizing our use of them, then I feel like I'm leaving money on the table, and I don't want to do that. So for me, that's kind of, again, I think of that as development in a way. I'm not doing enough. I think when I wasn't working, so I did have a gap. And I also did a decent amount of contract work during that time. I was able to join organizations, attend events, workshops, and so spending time in between is definitely time when I can lean much more into development. But I do, and that's why when you reached out to do this podcast, I thought, oh, this is great. I would love to do something that takes me a little bit, outside of my comfort zone in a way. It takes me, a little bit outside of my sort of immediate focus. And to be able to lift my head up a bit is something that I am challenging myself to do as I'm here, of course, dedicating my professional effort to my work at Lexington Medical.
Well, I give you a ton of credit, because a lot of people would say, hey, it's an opportunity that's been presented to me to get out of my comfort zone. No, I'm going to stay in my comfort zone. I don't really want to do that right now, maybe another day. And then there's others who kind of look it square in the face, say, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. So I give you a lot of credit for that. You touched on something that I almost accidentally didn't inquire with you on, and that is when you were going through that gap of unemployment. You talked about 2021. Here we are in 2025 recording this together, and it is a completely different market for talent acquisition. And there's a lot of people out there who are banging their heads against the wall trying to find employment. Going through this a stint yourself, do you have some thoughts or advice or words of encouragement for those who are listening who are, facing that right now?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely not easy. right? I was able to find a group that I really appreciated being part of, which is a senior human resources network that's here local in Boston, and joining them and having weekly get-togethers where it was other senior human resources leaders in transition. So that was one outlet for me that I really found fruitful. And being able to help people within that group, you know, for example, help people negotiate offers or do mock interviews. And so we would look at each other's resumes. And so that was really great. For me, when I also took on contract work and quite a bit of it, actually. So I was working for most of the time when I didn't have a full-time regular position. And some of the contract work I took that I definitely was able to, it was all individual contributor work. So one example is I took on a compensation assignment because my initial thought in 2023 was also at the end of 2023 is when I first became in transition. And it was a really challenging time to find a director of talent acquisition role. In fact, there were not many posted, if any. And so I thought, why don't I see if it makes sense to transition to compensation since I had just taken on expanded responsibilities at my previous role. And so I did a contract assignment in compensation and realized that I truly love talent acquisition. And my next one was an individual contributor role as a talent in talent acquisition, doing recruiting. And I said to myself, you know, hey, I still got it. I can still recruit, even though I had been a manager for quite some time. I can still, you know, be an IC and do that well. And it was outside of our medtech industry. But it also made me feel like, gee, I really miss medical device. I truly did love that. Yeah. And then again, being kind of true to who I am and what my strengths are is I think what got me to this company, because it just fits everything that I love, which is leading the talent acquisition function. It is a company that's in growth mode, which I love. We're just the right size for me, where I can truly build. And I love to build, and being able to build our talent acquisition function, our processes, our tools, and also help build a company at the same time. So that was exciting. And so being able to kind of, for me, it was about finding kind of like the perfect fit. I found that when I was interviewing at other companies that weren't just right, it was demotivating, right? Because I would think, well, gee, I did pretty well in that interview. I'm pretty good at what I do. But hey, they found somebody who had done that exact job before. And of course, they would hire them because there's so many people in transition.
Yeah. I think there's two primary things that you said there that I took away. One is the power of community, and make sure that you're not alone and that you feel supported by those who are around you who might be experiencing something similar, so that you can have some camaraderie and not go it alone. And then two, you've mentioned the power of your contract experience a few times as far as how it led to transitioning to a new industry, the fact that it kept you fed, the fact that it helped you figure out what you do and you don't like about, you know, HR/TA.
I will say my husband kept me fed, not the contract, but.
Well, right. Hey, what's your husband's name? We got to give him a shout out. I sure hope he listens to this episode because he sounds like a spectacular guy. What's his name?
Paul Lasinki.
Paul. Okay. All right, Paul. Well, kudos to you, man. Keep on keeping. That is awesome.
Thank you.
But yeah, the contract piece, and if you can find it, it keeps you engaged and sharp and your skills sharp while you look for that right opportunity. And I always tell people, you know, I don't care if it's talent acquisition or another function. Sometimes when people start to feel the desperation, they want to take a position that is below their pay grade. And I always say, please, I would much rather you see you do some consulting, see you figure out some sort of contract opportunity while you look for the right one, because a month after that pressure comes off, you're going to want to start looking anyway. So you might as well just hang in there to the best of your ability.
Exactly. And that's how I felt, right? I was willing to take an IT role that was contract, but I wasn't willing to do that for a regular full-time job.
Yeah. Last but not least, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about what you're excited about at Lexington, because I know that you're in growth mode. I know there's a lot of cool things going on, but if you would share with the audience from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
For sure. Yeah. So it's been 6 months now for me at Lexington Medical, which has been very exciting. And in my past experience, we talked about me building talent acquisition functions, and that's something I'm able to do here as well. Our focus here is on quality utmost. So that's something that I love, is that people that work at the company are just truly brilliant and really great at what they do, especially when we hire engineers. So we tend to hire engineers that have gone to some of the top universities that are, again, truly great at within their fields. And so the outcome then is you get to work with people who are really smart and really capable. So that leads itself to just really wonderful collaboration. And so, of course, that means a lot of work for us when it comes to hiring, because we do, we're privileged where we do receive so many outreaches from candidates for roles like within engineering. And of course, we do like to find the star. So the company is growing. So we are singularly focused in the product category of surgical stapling. So being singularly focused, it does mean that everybody here does breathe and love surgical staples. And we have made, it's a market that's significant. So it's a nearly $6 billion market that has had a duopoly with two major companies that have kind of split the market. And we believe that there's space for a third company, which is what we've been founded based on almost back in 2023. 2013. So at this point, over 10 years ago, of course. It's been an exciting journey to continue to grow, right? So the organization has grown significantly year over year since the product was first launched in 2018. And continue to grow. And we're vertically integrated, so that's also exciting, where we have our manufacturing is here in Bedford, so our products are made in the U.S. We have our sales force in U.S. and Europe and Australia, so we're a global company.
Awesome. Well, I'm grateful for you being here and sharing more about your journey and your insights. And if it's cool with you, what we'll do in the show notes, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and a link to Lexington Medical's website, and encourage people to reach out.
Yes, we're definitely hiring. So please reach out.
Well, thanks so much, Alina. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.